You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. Hi, guys. Just a few things to mention before we get started with this week's episode. If you're looking for episode 88, the last episode with Aaron Wilmy, we needed to make a change and put it on hold, but I will let you know when it's back up, probably in a few months. And if you were able to listen over the weekend, I'm so glad. I loved that conversation. But you can definitely catch it later and I'll keep you posted. Also, I'm going to be starting a Patreon page in the next couple of weeks, which is a tool for artists to get paid for what they create. And it might be of some use to you guys as well for projects that you're pursuing. A friend recommended it to me, and it allows fans to become patrons of creators they follow. And I'm hoping it will be a good solution for the members of my community who have asked for ways to contribute to The Compass and my own resolution to truly value my time. Anyway, it's in the works, and I'll let you know when it launches, and I'd love to see you there. I'm excited about the ways it will allow me to grow the scope of The Compass in this third year of its journey. My guest today is Stephen Sanders. Stephen is a creative producer and chef who has contributed to the theater and TV worlds in many different ways over his career. He was in my class at the University of Evansville and has always been a force of positivity in my life. It makes me so happy to hear him talk about how he's feeling now and what he's excited about and where he's been. I hope you enjoy the 89th episode The Compass. So what do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
Let's see. I've been thinking a lot recently about the long haul and how I was really lucky to have people in my life in Evansville and places, you know, like John David Lutz, and people sort of open my eyes to the long term and things that I would be good at in the long term. And that was sort of hard at the time. But now, as I'm hitting, you know, the mid-30s, which are really exciting, I'm sort of starting to see how that was really great in terms of how I've gotten to where I am, because I kept that in my mind's eye and I kept that as a goal, and it changed, you know, from time to time. But I just remember very vividly in college, as I'm sure we all do as teenagers and young adults, not have any foresight into where things can go or where the possibilities can lead. And I'm sort of realizing lately that that was so important to have that instilled in me at that time, because I know a lot of people that are not in a creative environment, or, you know, are just in different industries, you know, friends I have or acquaintances or people who tell me stories about their friends, we're reaching that time where people are going, oh, the bigger picture, you know, where should my life go? Where do I want it to go?
Right.
I've been doing this thing for a while, but is it what I really want to do?
And I'm sure also that just the really practical side, like,
yeah,
how do I save for retirement?
Right. That sort
what
of stuff.
What is the 401k?
Yes. All of that stuff. And I just sort of constantly find myself being or feeling lucky that in terms of creativity and art making, I sort of committed myself to that long term very early on. So that's sort of what I've been thinking about in terms of the dark side, is, you know, not patting myself on the back, but sort of reminding myself in a positive way that creating art and creating anything for the long term, I've sort of been thinking about that, which doesn't mean there aren't frustrations. Like, you know, there's still different chapters of your life and where you think they're going to go. And I've been lucky to sort of be in many different creative environments and many facets. But I still feel sometimes like I did senior year of college, you know, when everyone was going to grad school in a specific thing and they were setting their sights on this one specific goal. And I was lucky to have done a little bit of everything, because I was, you know, in a program for generalists. So we did a little bit of everything, but I sort of felt this lost feeling of like, I don't have that specific thing that I'm really reaching for and hitting. And it's become a positive thing now, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And now looking back at all the different things that I've done, I'm excited by those things. And it's helped my long-term goal and the darkness because, you know, I think when you're in a specific creative facet, like acting, or when you're a literary associate, or when you're in casting as I am now, you can very easily get bogged down by not feeling good enough, not feeling like the work that you're doing is good enough. And I constantly find myself in these situations where I remind myself that I excelled or was lucky to excel in another part of it. And that sort of helps the darkness keep at bay. And it reminds you that you do have confidence in different areas. Much like I think you do in the interaction of your personal life as opposed to your artistic life, where you're like, oh, I conquered that thing today personally. And that reminds you that, you know, positivity and is great and moving forward is great.
So it's really kept you open to all sorts of possibilities and to change.
And to change, which has been great. And I think another part of that is, you know, I've primarily been in artistic offices, like artistic administrative offices. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, an open flexibility, you know, in terms of producing and administration that you have to have and sort of going with the flow and how things work and adapting to things. And a large part of producing is listening to what's going on and adapting the things around you to accommodate those things. And that's helped me with the darkness too, because it's sort of trained your brain to say, okay, this is the problem. This is how we're going to solve the problem. So that's been helpful too. But you know, I think the darkness will always be there. I'm sure that's, you know, that's what I've come to learn. And that it's about remembering those times that you did overcome it and the positivity that you found around it, and either trying to apply that to the current moment or trying to figure out how to do it in a new way because you have done it before.
Yeah.
Is really helpful.
Do you think part of that has manifested as patience?
Yes. I mean, I'm very lucky to come from a family with two of the most patient parents you will ever see in your entire life. So that was instilled in me in a great way. And I think the idea of artistic patience is something that not a lot of people talk about, but that you sort of come to find that you either have or you don't have, which I think it should be something that's talked about and make you know, actors and young creative artists aware of, is that there is this artistic patience to have. But I also think it's hard to tell someone who is 22 and just graduating from school to have artistic patience.
Yeah, and I guess there's a fine line, because on one side you want to have the drive and you want to take risks and make things happen, but there's so much weight put on now, like blowing up and just being a hit and just being an instant success and, or a YouTube star or whatever it is.
Right, and taking every opportunity that comes to you.
Instead of playing the long game.
Right. And I don't know, I think there's a huge importance for the long game to be talked about when you are deciding to commit your life to being an artist and to art making. And I there's a book called Art and Fear that I vividly remember from school. And it's not so much that I remember the actual specific content, because I read it so long ago, just that idea of art and fear just is constantly repeated in my mind. It's like, even just those words, you know, will just repeat themselves sometimes in my psyche when you're trying to go through something or get something done. And
yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, and that you can kind of apply it to the, like, a life in the arts, but also to, like, your art not being safe.
Right, right.
Not making the safe decisions, too.
Yeah. And I had to work through a lot of sort of safety issues with being creative and art due to the environments I was in, not because they were negative or in any way, but I was very fortunate to be in the room with these major art makers. And you know, the confidence that they had in me to be there and to be around what they were doing was great. But it's that moment when you sort of have to constantly remind yourself that you have great creative ideas and that you're a young developing artist. Mm-hmm. And those, that voice that you have needs to be heard, maybe not in the room that you're in with these other people, that that's the room where you learn. And then there's a room where you create.
Right. But it's not just about supporting their work.
Right. That there is a person inside you that is responding to the work they're doing, just like they're responding to you being there.
Yeah.
And that took me a long time. It really...
Yeah, because I feel like there's something in most of us, I kind of wish I didn't have it.
Right.
That you want to just please these people, especially if they're people you look up to.
And you want to soak in everything that they have to give you. But I spent a lot of time soaking all that stuff in and didn't think about what the next step after that was. Mm. How to process it as an artist, how to process it as a human being, and how to apply it tangibly. I just was so concerned with not missing a moment of observation.
When do you feel like you really realized that that was a change you need to make?
I think when I started as the lit associate at Williamstown Theater Festival, and when, you know, I was reading artists and I started to, you know, as opposed to feel that impulse to support an artist along with those mentors, I was starting to feel the impulse to support an artist myself. And that really made me grow up artistically, because you read a play and you get excited about the writer and you say, everybody needs to know this person. Everybody needs to read this right now. And it's like, I felt that along with my mentors, but it's a totally different thing to feel that yourself. Hmm. And even then I wasn't feeling it myself, because, you know, I was working underneath someone and that person was a mentor as well. But I had the creative independence at that point and the resources to really start that voice within me, which was really great. And I think it goes back to, you know, studying theater and studying art making in school. And then how does that translate into the world and actually creating it in everyday life and actually getting in there and doing it in a non-safe environment.
And that the goal isn't school.
Right, and discovery. It's, you know.
The goal isn't just succeeding at school.
Right.
You have to think beyond that.
Right. So that was a really exciting moment for me. And then, you know, the next step after that is how to do that without fear and how to speak that, how to let that voice tell people, regardless of whether anyone is listening to you about those things, and building that toughness that you need in order to continue to get that voice out there and be repetitious and stick to your guns and keep those people in mind and make sure people hear you, which I imagine happens for anyone who's growing into being an adult and growing into a profession of any kind. But
yeah, it can feel especially important though to an artist, I think, since your art is really literally coming from you.
Right.
Like your voice is an integral, it's not just speaking up about the work that's over here.
Right.
In your fill in the blank profession. Right.
And in that particular instance, it's like, you know, you're reading someone else's art and getting excited about it. And it's like, I had to remind myself that my artistic impulse to support that artist is itself art. And is itself a creativity that needs to be nurtured. I think a lot of times you can feel in producing or in arts administration that you yourself don't have anything to do with the process.
Right.
I mean, I feel that a lot, where it's like, you know, if I've, in any of the capacities that I've been able to work in it, if I've done my job that people know about that person and they don't know that I'm in any way involved in them finding out about that person, I've sort of done my job, that it should always be about that artist. It should always be about the work they created, and that I am merely somebody going, this is awesome, this is great, and getting it to other people so that that artist can continue their work and reach other people. But it's easy in that moment to not remind yourself, or to remind yourself that itself is a creative impulse and you need to keep it going.
Yeah, well, I would say in doing that, you're really creating community.
Yeah.
In a way, which is what I think of when I think of you. Like, I think yeah. of this positive energy you have and the way that you... Anyone I talk to, if I mention your name, they're like, oh my God, I love Steven Sanders. and it's probably because you're in their life in some extremely different way from the last person that I mentioned your name to. But you really are like connecting those people and introducing them to things
that's cool.
in a really positive way.
That's great.
That's what
I mean, that's what I would say if someone said to me, what do you try to do? I would say, you know, I try to just meet as many people as I can, meet as many artists that I can, and fall in love with as much work as I can, and try to find a way to give a voice to it.
Hmm.
And still pay my rent every month.
Well, we're going to talk about all of that.
Great.
But you mentioned your parents. Can we go back to your family? Like, what do they make of you choosing to be an artist for your career?
Well, I'm really lucky that they were both passionate about creative outlets in their lives. I think that's really, I was really lucky to have that. My dad was an actor in high school and in college and has, you know, a gorgeous voice and always sang in, you know, church and at school. And that was always something that he was really passionate about. And he's an accountant, but, you know, he always kept that part of himself alive and it was always something that he did. Mm-hmm. So I grew up around that. And my mom studied art and education and was an art teacher before she had me and my sister. And now she works in the food industry. So they understand that sensibility and they understand the importance of that. And, you know, they sort of always just instilled this really hard work ethic in me. It's like, you know, if that's what you're going to do, get in there and do it and figure out how to do it, just like you would any other profession. So that was really, really helpful because, you know, as I'm sure you've seen with friends and other people that you know who are in the industry, a lot of times that experience with your parents can sort of fuel a creative fire in a different way in terms of them not understanding it and not supporting it. So I've always been really lucky that they have understood it and they're interested in it and they're excited about it. And, you know, they would come to see me and come to plays and they know it's important to me, and so they support that, which is really, really cool. And I think that's, you know, the basis for then what I try to do in the industry is because I experienced that sort of support from them. It informs how I support artists or try to support artists because I had such a great experience.
Yeah. And then what does your sister do? Remind me.
She works at a company in Nashville, where I'm from. It's logistics, which couldn't be more opposite from what I do. But she works with an industrial company, and she helps plan the barge routes on the rivers. She has a certain, you know, section of rivers that she plans, and she does a lot of work with the barge captains, and it's a lot of interaction with the barge captains.
Fascinating.
It's fascinating. It's so fascinating. So she has a large people component to her job as well, but in a completely different way than I do.
That's so interesting.
It's really interesting.
What was it like growing up in Nashville? Because I know it's such a music town, such a food town.
It was like that when I was there, but it's really exploded to this sort of insane, really cool level. But I think that was also really helpful in terms of me developing into who I am now, because, you know, you would go to restaurants, you would go to places, you know, the mall, you would go to anywhere and there would be someone with a guitar singing in the airport. and just seeing that around you and seeing that be an open sort of accepted part of a city's culture was really cool. And it really, you know, I think about that sometimes where I'm like, I truly have been around that my whole life. I mean, even
really
the suburbs,
special. It's
really special. Like I grew up in the suburbs and, you know, I went to private school and, you know, I had that sort of very suburban upbringing, but it was in the context of this music town.
Yeah.
So it had what I thought was sort of the best of both worlds in that aspect.
I think that's just beautiful because a lot of places, you don't really come in contact with the arts unless you are someone who seeks it out.
Right.
Or who does it themselves.
Right.
But there are certain cities like Nashville, like New Orleans, places like that, where you could, you know,
yeah,
be directing barges like your sister, but like just encounter it
right
throughout your day.
Right.
Which and is amazing.
I also think it's a great, like that city is so used to having people who are much like, you know, when you're a working actor in New York, singing at the bars, having a day job, you know, creating this creative life for yourself, that's happening all around you.
Yeah, they're a little aware of that.
Yeah. And so the sort of common ground and communication between all people in the city has that informed aspect to it, which I think is really cool.
And there's some empathy there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're sort of genuinely interested in what you're doing and how it works. And, you know, I sort of liken it to, you know, when you go to a party and you see a bunch of people you haven't seen in a long time and you're like, what are you working on? What are you making? It's like that type of discussion and checking in with someone artistically happens with people all over the city because they're used to seeing that happen all around them, which I think is really cool and is unique to that place.
Would you ever think about moving back?
Yeah, I
love it. Or are you a New Yorker now?
I feel like I'm on year 12, so it's like,
I know.
I'm pretty entrenched, but I love that place, and I love that artistic vibrancy is there.
Like, you could move back
and I could
a different kind of artistic life.
Yeah. And I think in there is totally a world in which, you know, I envision myself taking this like wonderful community of people that I've been so fortunate to be around here and finding a way to bring that community to there, because I know it's a place that would appreciate it and would embrace it, you know, down the road when I'm ready.
Well, and as New York gets more and more expensive,
yeah,
and more artists have to leave,
right? They're moving to places like this. So there's, you know, I know there's already this sort of great untapped resource there of wonderful artists who have decided to make a life there that could also work in conjunction with the community here, and there's a lot of, you know, cross-pollination that could happen. I mean, I live in Williamsburg, and the number of times, you know, I overhear people saying like, I'm just gonna move to Nashville, or like, I was thinking about moving to Nashville, and I'm like, oh, interesting, I did the opposite. It seems like there's an interesting like light at the end of the path there. So I'm really excited about that and to see where that goes and how that leads there. But yeah, I totally could see myself moving back there. It's a great place.
Can we talk a little bit about this new project that you just started?
Yeah,
sure. Or should I call it a business?
Yeah, totally.
A business?
It's like a grassroots business. I think that's what I would call it. So I, like I said, my mom works in the food industry. She's a general manager of a cafe in Nashville. And my grandfather was the general manager of a bakery there, a big regional bakery. So food has always been in my life, and I, you know, grew up working at the place where my mom works, and that was always a huge part of me. But I had never really started cooking for myself, because as I'm sure you can imagine, you know, any sort of artistic life doesn't leave time to really sort of have a set time to cook yourself a meal every day. It's funny, I remember I was at Juilliard recently here, and I looked, and there was a flyer for cooking for artists, and they were having a class to teach basic cooking skills to the students. And I was like, oh my God, I would have loved that when I was like 22. But I sort of, in this past like couple of years, I'd say like 2 or 3 years, have really sort of embraced my passion for food and for cooking. And I've discovered it's something I really, really love doing. And so I've started this business where I do sort of pop-up supper club dinners in people's houses, which I think is tied to like Southern hospitality and, you know, food being connected to the home and being connected to experiencing and time with other people and catching up with other people. That sort of domestic aspect of it I really love. So I came up with this idea to offer up my services to come into a home, and you invite 8 to 10 dinner guests, and we come up with a menu, and I do all the shopping, and I come over and I cook, and I'll, you know, take photos if you want photos of the evening, so that you can feel like you can have sort of a New York evening in your own home without having to go out.
I love that.
It's really fun, and the response to it has been really great, and I really like it because it keeps the people aspect to the food, and it keeps the people aspect to cooking. You know, I've been lucky to be, well, first of all, you get to see some amazing apartments.
Yeah, I was going to say it's so personal.
It's really personal. And I've been lucky to have clients that are really excited about having me there. You know, it doesn't feel like I'm just the chef in the kitchen creating something while they're having this event. You know, they say, this is Steven, he's cooking for us tonight. And, you know, you meet everybody that's coming to the dinner table. And
right.
It's been really, really neat to sort of meet new people and get to know people that way, which I think is something that's sort of really great about our generation. I think it's something that they're really excited about. And it's sort of this whole small business idea and supporting other small businesses and taking care of each other as a generation in terms of saying, oh, Steven does these 8 to 10 pop-up, you know, supper clubs in their house. Let's have one at our house to support his new thing.
Right. And the internet kind of allows you to be able to spread the word. And
yeah.
People to.
And then they tell their friends and, you know.
Take Instagrams.
Right. So I just love the like infinite level of positivity that can come from
You're going to meet so many people this way.
I know. It's really, and it's a whole group of people that, you know, I don't necessarily think I would meet otherwise.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I love that it exercises a totally different part of my brain creatively. It's like escapist almost in terms of like, it's a totally different thing to get yourself geared up for and to be in the moment for.
So this is a larger topic for your entire career. Yeah. But now that you started this new business, how are you handling your full-time job plus this new creative passion?
I love the flexibility of the food. And, you know, it's, you know, I'm sure it's something that everybody who is a freelancer or has a small business, the flexibility that you have in terms of the hours and when you could work on things is really great. So, you know, I can schedule dinners and on the weekends, I can schedule them, you know, for nights, you know, that I have free, because obviously we spend a lot of our time going to the theater and seeing things at night and getting to know new writers and new artists that way. So it's something that's another ball to juggle in terms of scheduling things in my life. But I really like that. I like that, you know, you never know when a Wednesday is going to be filled by cooking dinner or seeing a play. I mean,
do you feel like you thrive on being busy?
I do.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I mean, there are definitely times when you're like, oh, there's nothing to do today. That feels really relaxing and exciting. But then if I were to have, you know, say 3 weeks of that, I think I would start to, there's only so many times I could reorganize everything in my apartment before I would go insane. So it's got that sort of spontaneity to it that I like, that there's always something to do and that I can always get in there and schedule a bunch of things to do if I want to. And it's a way to hone those skills in a different way. Like, to constantly keep yourself busy in that way makes you a better cook and makes you, you know, a better producer even, because you're really producing an evening for these people with food.
I'm sure you're learning a lot about like timing and stuff too.
Yes. Yes. It's, you know, and how to accommodate for the timing of people having conversations, and, you know, you don't want to rush them and, you know, let them finish that conversation at the table before you move on to the next course and those
types
of things.
But you don't
want to
ruin the food.
Right. But like, you know, the chicken may get dry if it stays in the oven any longer. So it's like, what people skills do you drop in there to get them evening going? I just like all those challenges because I think they just make me a better person in so many different ways. And it's still fun too, which is great.
Well, and I know that you also did some cooking up at Space at Rider Farm.
I did. That's actually where...
Is that kind of where you got back into cooking?
Yeah. I mean, I would really sort of attribute my honing the skills with Space on Rider Farm and with Emily Simonas, who's a good friend of mine. So I would really, you know, they started having me up just, you know, sous chef for different dinners. And that's sort of how I like got out of the game and sort of remembered those skills I had from when I was working with my mom. And, you know, then I did one by myself and that went well. You know, I had a sous, but I planned it. And that's where it really sort of started to take shape. And now I'm doing them, you know, quite frequently, which is really fun. I really get excited about going up there, getting out of the city.
You're just cooking for a bunch of artists.
And you're cooking for a bunch of artists. It's like, what could be better?
Who is going to be more excited about food
right.
than a bunch of artists?
Right, exactly. And so, and, you know, it's like I can explore, you know, my Southern food heritage and, you know, things I've never made. And, you know, I can say, oh, I've never made X before. And it's, I find it a great challenge. And it's actually really great in terms of sense memory, I think, of being a cook that, you know, I didn't just make it for myself. I made it for 15 people. And you remember how to make it.
Yeah.
And you remember because it's such, the stakes are higher, which I really like. And it just feels really in tune with where food came from in my life and how it developed in general, because I grew up, you know, on the outskirts of Nashville in a suburb, but, you know, we were, you know, as they say down south, near the county line. So it was like, you know, there were farms and there were farm stands and all those things were parts of my life already that are now part of this big farm to table movement. So it's just a really cool way for me to reconnect and figure out culinary adventures that I want to go on, I guess.
Yeah, especially since we live in a city. So to be involved in something like that, it's nearby. It's great.
The Tennessee in me gets to come out, which is really exciting.
Does your accent get stronger?
It does a little bit, yeah. You put me around the animals and it'll pop out in a minute.
So how did you get into casting? Was that right after you were working at Williamstown?
Yeah, I was at Williamstown. And when I was the literary associate, we did a lot of play readings. And I ended up doing the casting for the play readings. And as I was working on them, you know, we did, as they do at Williamstown, a high volume of things in a small amount of time. So finding a lot of actors in a smaller amount of time sort of really gave me the way to figure out that that was something I was good at and was interested in and wanted mm-hmm. to continue to pursue. Because not only were we casting something, but we were casting something in a very small amount of time with not a lot of resources. And so it was an interesting transition to like producing a reading as a whole and casting something within producing that reading as a whole with limited resources. So it was like this natural flow of that type of idea of casting in terms of stuff that I was comfortable doing and then discovering this other part creatively that I hadn't done before but was excited about. So I sort of realized that's where I wanted to go. And then, you know, I was talking to my boss, Jenny Gersten, who was so instrumental in me sort of discovering all these artistic parts of myself and really getting in there and trying them. You know, I was saying, I think this is like something I would really like to do. And, you know, she has known my current boss, Meg Simon, for a really long time. And, you know, she was like, I got this email that there's something available. And so she, you know, told Meg about me. And at the same time, I was also helping the casting director, David Caparelliotis, with a TV pilot at the time. And he had received the same email from Meg. So he said, you know, this is available. You know, I'm happy to tell her about you if you think you're interested. And I was like, yeah. And then it just sort of took off from there. So then I started working with her and I'm still there with her now. And with the wonderful Finley Davidson, they're both amazing casting directors. And, you know, it just sort of felt like a natural fit for me in terms of continuing to hone those skills. And it's been great. And it's in television, but what I love so much is that because New York is such a theater town, as Meg always says, it's the same artists. Yeah. So it's...
Because I was going to ask about that, because you've been so steeped in the theater for so long.
And that's what I love so much about that office, that, you know, Meg was a Broadway casting director and a regional casting director for, I think it was about 20 years. I think she had her business for 16 years with her partner before she moved into television full-time. And she cast all these incredible things, like, you know, original cast of August Wilson plays. She did the original Angels in America. So there's this theater passion and background and history there.
That you like, wouldn't necessarily guess at first glance.
Right.
Yeah.
That I love so much about being in that office. And, you know, we're always out of place to get to know new actors because that's the best way to get to know them in New York. So I don't feel like I left theater completely. Mm-hmm. And all the things that I'm learning there informs things that I have done and things that I will do.
It's interesting to me that it's such a small office.
Yeah.
And from, I don't know if you would agree with this or not, from the outside, it looks almost like an apprenticeship or like a very close mentorship.
Yeah.
You know, because it's really just the three of you, right?
Yeah. It's really amazing the amount of work that happens during pilot season, which is our busiest time. You know, it's to us, because there are only three of us, it's this flurry of activity that happens and we get to the end of it. And
then you're working with an LA office.
And we're working with an LA office. We're there to support them.
Right.
Yeah. And have New York actors come in to go on tape with them, because the casting directors are primarily in LA. So we serve as a support system to them, which is great. When we are in pilot season and there are 13 to 15 pilots going on, we're a support system to all 13 to 15 of those casting directors. So the flurry for the three of us is insane, but it's this great fun insanity. I mean, it's like how fun to have your insane time at work be working with actors on television projects. It's like, if you've got to have a crazy job, it might as well be with fun people doing fun things. So it's great. And it's, you know, the way that I've gotten to know new actors and learned from artists, being in the room with them and seeing them audition and, you know, working on auditions with them. It's astounding. It's, you know, it's something I wish everyone could see, that the work that happens in the room between the casting director and actor, I think is really, really cool. Cause it's such, you know, I think if you're in the right environment, a trusted environment, and it really can be a positive, exciting place to do work that will hopefully go on to get you other work. You know, as Meg always says, you know, when the actor walks into the room every single time, we want them to be the answer. We want them to be the person that books it.
Right.
And I love that positivity in terms of art and creating art. And it's great to see that be the spirit in a place.
That's wonderful. Because I think a lot of times actors shouldn't just be overcome by their own anxiety or their own fear. And
right.
Just see judgment, even though that's not the intention.
Right. It's like we're excited to like, see no, you
course,
come in and be great.
They want you to be the ones. They don't have to see 100 more people.
Right. And it's the thing I used to feel, you know, when I was a lit associate reading plays or going to see plays. You sit down to see a play or you sit down to read a play and you're like, I want this to be the best play I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you'll always encounter people in the industry that have a negativity about them and have a response to art that is primarily negative. And that's when I want to say to them, why are you doing this? Like, why, if the way you're responding to art and you're choosing to make art making and being around art making part of your everyday life and your profession, why wouldn't you want it to be positive? Why wouldn't you want to go in and say, I loved this? Or if you didn't love it, say, I didn't love it because of this, and try to figure out how that can help you and other people create better art. Because if the answer is every single time, oh, I can't believe I'm seeing another X, or I can't believe I'm doing another this, it just doesn't sound like it would be a really great life for anyone. And there are always going to be times when you have to do things you don't want to do, or there are things that you're not excited about. But the general overall spirit of yourself artistically, if you're going to have a creative life, should be, I can't wait to get to the next thing. I can't wait to see the next person. I can't wait to read the next play. I can't wait to see the next designer's work. Otherwise, there are too many other challenging things about a creative life long-term to not have that positivity and that passion for it.
Yeah. When you first moved to New York, you were interning at Signature Theater. And I know that at that time, that was a really difficult thing that you were all doing. I've talked to Miranda. I've talked to Lori on the podcast. How did you piece together those like first couple years out of school? Moving to the city, working a million jobs.
Yeah, it was such an interesting time. And I was so excited that we got to go through all of that together. I think it would be really hard coming into the city as a young artist without a network of people that you know previously. Mm-hmm. Because I even, you know, that summer, I think I was the earliest one to start my internship. So I was here for a little while before other people, our other friends, started their internships there. And I even felt it in that time. It was like, oh, I'm not, you know, around all these friends. I'm not constantly creating stuff. That's sort of part of myself. That's when you first start to learn how to manage the long term and how to be okay with the dark times and the times where it's drier and you're not creating. You sort of learn really quickly how to figure that out. And I sort of had to figure out, I mean, I think I was lucky that I didn't quite know what I wanted to do specifically. Mm-hmm. I think it would be harder. I watched a lot of my friends who were coming out of grad school, you know, 3 or 4 years later in a specific line of work, sort of really wrestle immediately with how to deal with your sort of creative life being cut off to a certain degree while you're trying to find work and while you're auditioning and things. And that, I think, was a little less intense for me because I didn't have this one thing that I was grabbing onto to try to find to do.
It's that or like, it's nothing.
Right. It was like, I was like, I'm here for anything. And, you know, we often talk about how, you know, those days were so long because you would start, you know, your internship in the morning and then we were all house managers at the theater. So you would like run and grab a salad on the way to the theater and make it to the theater and start your house management shift. And then, you know, the play is like 3 hours and you're like breaking down and you're not getting home until 12:30. And then you're like back at your desk at 9:45 the next day. And I just, that's when you start to learn the busyness that I think I've sort of embraced in all the different ways that I've been creative, including now with the food, the work I'm doing in food. It's just, you're the pilot of your own plane. You're the captain of your own ship. And you'll be given stuff to do as part of your job, and you'll be not given stuff to do as part of your job. And you'll be giving yourself jobs. And it's like, I think that's what I learned from those first years, because it was an interesting time for the theater because they were growing at a rate that their staff couldn't take on full-time positions. So we had, you know, they would often tell us, you know, Jim Houghton would say, you know, you guys are really so helpful to us because you're doing such an incredible amount of work, because we don't have the capacity to have full-time staff members for some of this stuff yet. So it really fell on the interns to sort of pick up that weight and do those things. And I am forever grateful for that, because it just really, it instilled a maturity, I think, in all of us in terms of our work ethic.
I'm sure you learned so much more.
And you learned so much more.
You were doing tasks that probably were not initially intended for an intern.
Right. You know, anything from, you know, helping on our great artistic research with these amazing people in the room to, you know, I remember Miranda and I like walking down 43rd Street in a windstorm with posters that we were going to go change out in the fronts and like literally almost getting blown away down the street and saying, you know, if we get blown away, who's going to house manage the show tonight? But I just, that challenge of being young and having no money and having no established artistic connections to move your career forward yet in a city was so helpful to do with a group of people like that. And there were people that were interns with us, like our friend Jen McVeigh, who was from Scotland. And she came in and she was an intern that instantly became part of that family with us because she went through that too. And so I was just really lucky to have those people around me during that challenge to figure out. And, you know, it's the same challenge that anybody who's 22 and just out of school has, where it's like, what do you want to do? You're the only one that can say what you want to do. You're the only one that can figure out what you want to do and then go do it. So those were the challenges that I found in that time. And also, New York City is the best place to be poor in the entire world. It's like, if you got to be poor, you might as well be poor in New York City as a young person right out of school, because there's infinite things to do that are free and are exciting, and you can go to parks and you can go to, you know, we would all figure out stuff we wanted to do on the weekends together that didn't cost a lot of money. And that's, I think, a great thing for young artists to realize too. And I try to tell them, you know, when we meet, you know, these young actors that are just out of school and they're starting to audition and, you know, they're like, should I go to EPAs and should I do these things? And you were like, absolutely, yes. Take every single opportunity you can to do anything that you possibly can, because you never know how that's going to come back later in life to help you. But also don't forget to have a life here, and don't forget to live in the city because it's a place you want to live, and not just because it's a place you think you can have a career.
Yeah, that's an easy thing to forget.
It's really easy to forget when you are coming out of school and you've lived in a dorm room and you've been in a place, you know, that was seen as a four-year means to an end, and you feel nomadic and you feel excited about that, and you feel like I could go anywhere. I could get in a car and go on a road trip. I could, you know, go to a place and then decide to just not go back to where I was. That's really exciting as a young person, but I think you can also forget to say, no, I like this city because I want to live here and because my friends are here and because I've developed a way of life that I like.
Right. It's not just because actors have to live in New York or LA,
right,
or whatever it is.
Right. You can live where you want to live. I mean, particularly, you know, we talk about at work with iPhones and self-taping and that whole idea, it makes it easier to live in other parts of the country and pursue work. Not long ago, you couldn't do that. You know, in order to be seen and to be put on any sort of tape, you had to be in the room. And before that, you had to be in the room because that's where everyone was. So it's really opened up, I think, the quality of life for an actor in a great way, or any, you know, artist, that the way information is exchanged now has evolved. So that's something to take into account too, because I think as a young artist, you're like, oh, I have to be in the room. I have to be right there. I have to like get them to see me in person, which is good. It's good for them to meet you and have an interaction with you and know you. But, you know, once they do that, you can be in Chicago with your friends and say, oh, I got a self-tape request and I'm going to go pop back to my hotel room for a second. I'm going to put it on tape and then I'm going to email it to my agent. And then I'm going to go back and have fun with my friends on the trip in Chicago. So I'm excited about that aspect of a creative life too, for our generation and for future generations, that a greater balance can be found, I think.
I hope so.
Me too.
I really hope so. Do you still feel any pull towards directing? I know that was something you did when you were younger.
I don't know. I think in the different facets that I've been involved in terms of creative producing, you find those skills useful and you utilize those skills in ways in all those different types of settings. That sort of has been a place where that part of me has been fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. As a producer, as a casting director.
Yeah, and those things.
That makes sense.
And I remember having this moment in school, sort of like, I think in senior year, where I got excited about the possibility of about finding the creativity and the things I create in the assembly of people that are put together in a room to create. And that if I can go, oh, I love X person, I love this person, and I love this person, I think those two people would love each other, and they've never met before, that's where I started to get excited about creativity in a directorial sort of way. And then it's like, okay, I put everybody there. I said, you guys go have coffee, you have fun, you guys meet each other, you guys come in for this, you guys do that, I'm out. You do what you want to do. And there's another happiness and freedom and excitement in that moment where it's like, I'm out, I'm gone. So I think that's sort of where that directing impulse and those artistic impulses sort of have gone in the 12 years I've been here.
Yeah. Is there a lesson that you've learned in the last couple of years that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about?
I think what I've really truly come to learn, which is something that they tell you to learn in school or in any sort of art making really early, but it comes at different times, is that I have a voice. That I don't just have a desire to be a part of this thing, that I have the ability and the talent to be a part of it. And, you know, you're not always going to get to be a part of it. Just because you have the talent doesn't mean you're going to be doing it. But I've learned to really create that rock hard sensibility in myself that I can do this and that I have an importance to myself in terms of doing it, that I don't think I would have ever known would take me this long to realize. But now that I do, I'm really excited about it because I don't feel like I realized it really early and then went back to question it. I feel like I've taken a long time to really discover it. And now there's no turning back. It's like people can say, oh, I don't know if you're good at that. And it's like, I've been working really hard for a good while now, and I'm going to say, no, I'm good at it. I can do it. I should be here. So
that's a beautiful thing to be able to say.
It is. It feels really good, and it feels really good to be able to remind yourself of that when it's the days that aren't as hard or aren't as easy.
Yeah.
And I will say I've always been really fortunate to have people around me that have said, no, you can do this, which is good too. But there always has to be a point in time when you sort of step away from everything and you say, even if they didn't say that, I would say that this is something I can do. It's only taken 12 years.
No, that's incredible though. Yeah, self-doubt is such a big hurdle to get over as an artist.
It is.
And I don't know why it's so monumental, but it is for a lot of people.
Yeah. I just think it, and I think it's exciting when you have a community of people who have realized that and haven't realized that, so that you don't feel isolated either way, so that you're not saying, oh, I'm in this room with people who all feel like they can do this thing so well, and I just don't know if I can do it. And, you know, or, you know, you are doing it and you're also in a room with people who really feel like they can do it. It's really exciting that you have a day when you're like, I don't know if I can. And none of those people identify with that quality because they've been doing it for so long, which hopefully I will get to that point at some point in my life. But then to be around other people in the community that are going through times when they're not sure if they can do it, it's great to have those people too. So I don't know. I think I've spent a lot of time building a community that I'm really excited about around me and that I care about. And I've been really fortunate to find people that care about me too, which is really great. And I'm so thankful for that. It just makes you want to fight harder to find new ways to support them and new ways to support yourself.
When you are like in the dark side and feeling uninspired or a little overwhelmed or lost, are there any like concrete things that you turn to again and again, like a book or music you listen to or a place that you go, that kind of thing?
I really have been turning to a lot lately, not so much that it's sort of memories of people that I've worked with that have been really important in my life. People like Roger Rees, who I was an assistant for, and Nicholas Martin, who I was an assistant for a long time. And those people, I was lucky to be with them later in their careers and see the tough artistic individuals that they had become. And they had, you know, obviously a lot of wisdom to instill in me, and I had great memories with them. And that's sort of what I'm really drawing from at the moment is, you know, I was lucky to be around these incredible people who had done incredible things. And I learned so much from them. And now I think part of me really realizing that I can do this and that it's something I should continue to do is I feel a real passion to continue bringing those spirits through in a new way to the profession. And, you know, learning from Roger Rees that, you know, Shakespeare can be in a bar and it could be bawdy and loud and crazy and fun and full of sex and, you know, all kinds of stuff, that it doesn't have to be beautiful and up on a pedestal, that, you know, I feel really passionate about making sure that still happens and that that's still around. Or, you know, for Nicholas, it's like he loved telling really great stories of any kind that made people escape and made people get lost in other things. And, you know, with the way our world is now and all the horrible things that are going on, I feel really passionate about making sure that still happens. And, you know, from, you know, even from working with Jenny, it's like when an artist walks into a room, they should feel supported from the very second that they are there to create. And I feel very passionate and learned so much from her about that, that like, first and foremost, that artist is what you're there for, and that's what you're working towards. So when I get dark and I get discouraged, I think about those people and those wonderful things that they taught me and those important things that I responded to and so many other people responded to, and how important it is for me to light a fire under my ass and keep those things going.
Yeah.
So it's, that's when the darkness starts to creep in, that's where I go.
That's great.
And I think about the things they've done and the hard times that they had that are so much harder than I have ever experienced.
Right, and that they overcame.
And that they overcame it. So that when the dark comes there, it's like, no, you have the tools to push that dark back. You have the tools to keep going. They've been instilled in you. It's like sort of every great 80s superhero cartoon that we probably ever watched as kids, where it's like, we've given you the power. Embrace the power. It's like, that's what I try to remind myself, is that I'm not out there alone.
Yeah.
I have those people still watching over me in a way.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who have touched all our lives. And then the last question is, have you seen anything recently that you want to recommend of any art form? But I assume you've seen some plays.
Yes. Oh, let's see. What have I seen recently that I loved? I've been watching a lot of TV, obviously, lately, and I've been so into Glow and so into just what it's doing in general. I think everyone should watch it. Everyone.
It's so fun to see all those women on screen
it's
together.
It's amazing. It's amazing to see them
on
screen together.
It's so refreshing to me. I'm like, look at what, how many, there's so many women.
There's so many women, and all of the male characters are not in the background, but it's not where you're there. And I love that. And I love how much fun clearly everyone is having. And I think that's so infectious in terms of watching it. That's what I've been recommending to everybody that will listen to me. I might as well tell people while I'm waiting in line at Starbucks to watch it. What else have I been watching? I've been watching my other favorite show of late. Is it actually a show that we were fortunate to work on at work, which is called Queen Sugar.
I love that show,
too. Isn't it fantastic? She's so great. They're all so great.
I haven't started the new season yet because we switched from cable to streaming.
Yeah.
I need to figure out now where I can
watch that. It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu? Okay.
Yeah.
I need the start of the new season.
It's so good. It's
so
like
good.
Just the storytelling and the way.
I love it.
The relationships and the characters are so vivid. And, you know, they'll build up. I felt this way about Brothers and Sisters when John Robin Bates wrote it. It's like, you create all of these dynamics between these family members, and then you put them in a room where they're forced to be in the room and they can't get out. I mean, it's kind of like every playwriting exercise you're ever told, but there's a reason it's an exercise, because it works.
Think about your last family gathering.
Right. And I love just how you can see, everybody can see themselves in an aspect of that family. And I think that's, to me, that's truly great television, is creating characters that everyone can see a part of themselves in and want to tune into.
And the whole cast is so great.
Oh, they're all great. It's really a great group of people. So I've been recommending that to people, and that's something I've been loving lately. I tend to, in the summer when it's slower in the theater world, get in there for the TV shows that I've been missing, because I've been out about every night at shows. But I just went to the 24-hour plays last night, the 25 under 20. It's not the 25 under 25, but it's the all the artists in it are under 25. So it's like the big Broadway 24-hour plays. But everyone in it is a new writer or a new director or early career, because they're under 25. And it's so much fun. You know, they're all delirious from staying up all night and working on these plays. And it's 10-minute plays, so they're about amazing things like, you know, the dynamics of a puppet family that's starting to break up and go their own ways. And, you know, they just choose really fun things to write about, because what are you going to write about in 4 to 5 hours when you've been up all night and can't figure out what to put on the page?
That sounds fun.
And it was just great. I had a really fun time last night seeing them do their stuff. So I like the summer like that, in that aspect, because those types of things happen. You know, it's not about the big Broadway shows debuting,
right,
or the off-Broadway shows and all the reviews. It's
anything,
like,
yeah,
the fun stuff is happening in the small spaces. Like, it is year-round, but you really get to dig in there and go see some cool stuff.
Those
are the things I would recommend. Yeah.
Well, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you wanted talk about anything? I know we didn't talk too in depth about Williamstown, but we touched on a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you brought up there at the end with Roger and
it Glenn. Was Williamstown was so formative. I think of Williamstown as my grad school.
Yeah. How long were you there?
I was there a long time. I was there 6 years. But I also had this unique experience of being there through three different artistic directors, which, you know, places, you know, if they do at all have a different artistic director, may have two to three at most throughout the lifetime of the organization. So to see three within the span of 6 years was fascinating. And to see this iconic place run by three different people and what their different skill sets and passions and artistic sensibilities brought to the way that organization was run was invaluable. I mean, it's like, that's everything to me. And it will always be a special place. And it's created this huge community for me of people that I love so much. And it's this great feeling again of the community where there are people who, you know, are in television shows or they're in plays or they're in films and they'll pop up places. And they were such a great, huge part of my young life that, you know, I don't see them a lot anymore because life takes you in different places, but it's good to have them around in this really unique way where, you know, I'll be like in the apartment doing something and something pops up and I'm like, oh my God, yes. Like, I haven't seen you in forever, but you're on TV in my living room. It makes me feel like a little closer to you. So it's that part of it is so cool that it gave me all these great people in my life that are now dispersed all over the world and I get to see from time to time in an abstract way.
Yeah, but I bet you learned so much about just running an artistic institution.
Yes.
And management styles.
Yes.
From watching those administrations change.
Totally. And there's so quickly. So many things that, you know, like I was talking about that I learned from mentors. I learned those in the context of that place and watching it be run and what it challenged them in doing and what they really liked and what they didn't like about running those places. And it's the central heartbeat, I think, of everything that I do now in terms of everywhere from what I do day to day to what I want to do later in life to all of those things. It's, you know, in the brochures, I'm sure it's still somewhere on the website. I forget. I think it was Christopher Reeve that said all roads lead to Williamstown. And that's sort of what I feel like happened to me. All my roads lead to Williamstown because I was there for so long, and they'll all continue to move out of that place in an abstract, I'm getting super visual in an abstract way. It's like I tried to explain once when I was reading plays how you sort of envision like an image for the structure, and then I was talking to someone, I was like, sorry, it's way too conceptual, you're like, what are you talking about? Because I was like, there's a tree and there are roots and then like scenes are roots, and they just looked at me like I was nuts.
Like it made sense when I was reading the play.
Right. Yeah. I was like, it totally made sense when I was in it, but now saying it to someone else, it just sounds insane. But that sort of image of a tree with roots is what Williamstown is to me, that all the stuff that I do will grow out of the people that I met there and the things that I learned there, which it does for everybody, I think, that's there. But I was lucky to have this sort of specific love affair with it. I know it was a love affair where you love things and you hate things, but you ultimately love it all.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
That will shape me forever.
Have you gone back recently? Like, once you stopped working there, have you gone back?
I've been
just
back
as a visitor, or not really?
Once.
Or is it too intense for that?
No, it's great. I had a super therapeutic moment, as I'm sure anybody who worked there for a long time does, when I went to see a play, and then I turned around and I got to walk out of the theater and go to dinner
and not do anything else.
That felt really wonderful. But, you know, it's like going back to school. It's like, you know all the hallways, you know everything,
you know
when I went there. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the people of the town who, you know, I love. It's that feeling of going back there and experiencing it without the insanity of being part of the producing entity. You can go, you know, I used to always hear people say, it's such a beautiful, serene, great place. I was like, I can see that from my desk at 2 in the morning. So it's nice, you know, the one time that I've been back, it was nice to experience that.
Yeah.
And I'll go back anytime, of course, to see anything and be around and see people. Because it's, I lived there for 6 summers. It's like, you know, it was where I lived. So it's that same feeling you have, you know, if you move from another city and then you go back there. It's seeing all the people and the places that you loved and you inhabited for a long time. It's where I read the rest of Harry Potter, which is a huge thing in a lot of people's lives.
It is.
It's things like that that you remember where you're like, that's the tree where I like read the last page. And you're like, oh my God. So it's really will special. Always be a very huge part of my life and continue to be a place that I love to go.
Can you tell people where they can find the information on your business?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I started a website. I was trying to come up with what I should name it. I was like, what in the world am I going to name this thing? And I was talking with my friend, Xanthi Elbrick, who's an amazing photographer. And, you know, we were sort of brainstorming where, what I should call it and what it should be like and all those things. And she was like, what about Oxford plaid? And I was like, interesting. And she was, and I was like, well, I do wear a lot of Oxford and I do wear a lot of plaid. She was like, and that's what you wear to dinner parties often when you're dressing up. And I was like, true. So it's named Oxford plaid. She's the reason.
Well done.
Well done, Xanthi. So you can go to oxfordplaid.com. And there are photos of the food and there's a little description of what I do and how it works. And, menus tend to be improvised due to the way I cook. It's, you know, I'm sort of utilize fresh ingredients and what's around and sort of improvise and make up a menu as you go along. So there aren't like sample menus or things, but there's photos of the food. So you'll get a sense of what my food is like and what it looks like. And, you know, there are photos of tables and things I've done. So you get a sense of what the evening will feel like. And there's a way to contact me there. And you can contact me at Stephen@oxfordplaid.com is my email address. I'm ready. So that's how you can get in touch, and then I'll be in touch about coming to a dinner table near you.
That's so exciting. Stephen, thank you for doing this.
Thank
this
was you,
truly,
Leah.
Truly wonderful.
It was really cool. I'm really, really excited and honored to be a part of it.
For listening to the Compass podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.